The Planet Rock Podcast with Sky Talk. Find a Sky Talk pack to suit you with inclusive calls to UK mobiles. Search Sky Talk.
Hello, I'm Paul Anthony, back for another Planet Rock podcast with Sky Talk. We got loads of amazing Planet Rock highlights for you today, including from The Vault, an archive interview with Gene Simmons of Kiss, and also Alice Cooper responds to Nikki Sixx's claims that The Who shouldn't tour anymore.
That's just his opinion. It's Nikki. He was dead.
Once again, Hairy Biker Dave is on his lonesome.
Help!
But he should still have some cooking advice for you.
I haven't got a blooming clue, really. Do you know what I mean?
Funder's Danny Bowes will be discussing the tickets out problem. He claims that if it was easy for people to buy tickets,
they wouldn't need touts. They would get their tickets in the first place.
Joe Elliott from Def Leppard talks about U2 giving away their music for free.
If you don't want it, delete it.
Former Thin Lizzy guitarist Eric Bell reveals his music influences to Wyatt in My Planet Rocks.
Lonnie Donegan, who blew me completely away.
And finally, legendary drummer Carmine Appice tells us about his memories of spending time with the late, great Prince.
Here's this guy. He's a lot like Hendrix.
But first, as promised, from deep inside the vaults here at Planet Rock Towers, is Gene Simmons of Kiss. He tells us about the time he first came across a then-unknown band called Van Halen.
I was invited to go see a band called The Boyz, B-O-Y-Z-Z, playing at the Starwood in Los Angeles. So I went with B.B. Buell, who was the mother of Liv Tyler before she was born. She was my date that night. This is in the 1800s, before most of you were born. This is in Hollywood, and so before the headliner came on at a club, a new band called Van Halen was hitting the stage that used to be called Mammoth, and had just changed their name. And as soon as they hit the stage, by the way, to so-so reception, I was knocked out. New way of playing guitar, a front man who was relentless and doing acrobatics. And so I basically confronted them backstage. I was waiting for them by the second song and said, I've got to produce you. I'll sign you. Yeah, but we've got this yogurt manufacturer who wants to be our benefactor. I go, don't do it. I'll fly you to New York and I'll pay for it myself. Just don't sign with this guy. And I did. Flew them to New York, bought them their first pair of leather pants, and couldn't convince anybody that this was the next big band. Running with the Devil, Van Halen.
It's the man who dies on stage several times a show. Nights with Alice Cooper, only on Planet Rock.
Here's some Yardbirds trivia for you. Which singer did Jimmy Page initially want to join the Yardbirds when he wanted to change their lineup and become the new Yardbirds? Terry Reid. Page wanted Reid to replace Keith Relf, but Reid refused. Reid enthusiastically recommended a guy that we like to call Robert Plant, and we all know what happened next. They turned into Led Zeppelin. They were called the New Yardbirds. And Keith Moon said, well, that's going to go over like a Led Zeppelin. And that's where the name was born, right there. So Keith Moon actually named Led Zeppelin. Well, if you think John Paul Jones must be a serial killer because he has three names, you're probably right about that. That was Motley Crue with Wild Side. Last year, Nikki Sixx criticized The Who for continuing to tour. Says Nikki, they're playing half full places with just two guys left in the band. I get it. They're entitled to that, but it's just not for us. Wait a minute. They toured with a different singer than Vince Neil, so I guess that's okay. Anyways, they don't have to worry about Motley anymore. They're done. I would go to see, just to see Pete Townsend play. I interviewed a kid last night, didn't interview him, but I met him at the VIP afterwards. He's 13 years old. And I said, okay, who's your favorite guitar player? Now he's just been playing for 2 years and he's a pretty good little player, right? And I expected him to say Tom Morello or somebody you know, Bonamassa or somebody like that, that's a little bit more in his generation. And he goes, Pete Townsend. And I went, you are on the right track, kid. You are on the absolute right track. He says, yeah, he puts everything into it, which is absolutely true. Well, you have to remember, you're not telling people what to do. Everybody's got an opinion. And everybody's allowed to have an opinion. So that's just his opinion. It's Nicky. He was dead.
Alice Cooper on Planet Rock.
Well, Pat Benatar's life with husband Neil Giraldo is being turned into a Broadway musical. Neil was Benatar's lead guitarist as she shot to fame in the late 70s, early 80s. He'd earlier toured with Rick Derringer before ultimately appearing on every Benatar record as guitarist, songwriter, and sometimes producer. The pair fell in love along the way, and the now married couple still tours together. Well, that's nice. I don't think they've been married as long as Cheryl and I. How come we don't have a musical? Cheryl's an accomplished ballet dancer and jazz dancer. She's been performing as long as I have, and we've been married 40 years. I don't get it. I think everybody should eventually have their own Broadway musical.
Planet Rock gets hairy.
The Hairy Bikers and the Hairy Rock Show.
On Planet Rock.
That was Double Vision by Foreigner. Isn't he from Double Vision? You get it when you drank too much. You know it. That's the first sign. It's when the world splits, isn't it? And it's like when you're watching the telly and you've had a few too many, and you don't know which telly to watch. Do you ever get that? And you end up going goose-eyed. You know, well, I don't like it, really. And I think the split-screen telly is closely followed by the whirligigs. Nah, yeah, it's too much, too much. Anyway, let us have an email. This is from Derek Lawrence, or Degs, and the subject is liver and bacon recipe, and the message, hi guys, love the programme, but help! I'm confused about your recipe for liver and bacon. I decided to do it today for my son and me. It should be my son and I, actually, strictly speaking. So I searched for it on the net that produced two results, your own hairybikers.com and planetrock.com. When I looked at the ingredients, hairybiker.com says I need 4 teaspoons of plain flour. And Planet Rock says 2 tablespoons. Please clarify, how much should I use, please? Oh, I haven't got a blooming clue, really. Do you know what I mean? You just put enough until it's thick. Well, 4 teaspoons is kind of technically about 1 tablespoon. But 2 tablespoons is a lot. But maybe the Planet Rock one, because we're such generous souls, maybe the recipe was doubled up. Do you know what I mean? Either that, you're going to have very thick gravy. Do you like your gravy thick, Derek? I don't know. I don't rightly know. That's what Mavis used to say to Derek, wasn't it? I don't rightly know, Derek. I have no answer to that one, really. But, you know, if you're great... Well, all you've got to do is... I'd use 2 tablespoons. If it's too thick, just let it down with stock. Well, thank you, Derek. I'm sorry I couldn't be more helpful, really. But I'm sure it's a misprint on somebody's part because we only wrote 1 recipe. Breakaway by Inglourious. Inglourious will be at Rockstock, and if you haven't got a ticket, you won't be going to see them. Inglourious are brilliant. I reckon they're one of the best bands I've heard for years, and I'm sure my future son-in-law is amongst the members of the band, because they're awfully, awfully nice young men, as well as being hairy and playing great music. Now, it's time for the Hairy Picnic. And it's an odd choice, this one. Now, the recipe is on the Planet Rock website. It's there for you to use, peruse, and it's free. And it's like plum rice pudding. And it's a good thing. It's like, come on, you've all done it. rice pudding. You just take a spoonful when it's cold, it's all right. Tinned rice pudding. We've all done it. You know, you nang it back, out the can, fine. Well, make your own. It's so much cheaper than buying the bought stuff. It's tasty. And actually, you can put it in a cold box, put plum on the top, and just take it in little dishes, put some cling film on the top. You can have a lovely pudding at your picnic. Because as I said, picnics don't have to be like kind of rancid sandwich and a chicken drumstick covered in fluff. You know, get yourself a little thing. It's basically rice pudding, but nice with real vanilla extract. And it's made with kind of good rice, good skim milk. It's beautiful, but the top, it's got a plum compote. So it's plums that are stoned, quartered, a bit like Kingy on a night out. And it's made with cold water and sugar. So it's a bit like those Muller rice pots that you get, but DIY. Do you know what I mean? You scoop through the plum into that. But cold rice pudding. I used to work in a steelworks when I was a student, and there used to be this lad, and he was like, he's like really kind of scrawny and, you know, kept himself to himself. And every day for lunch, he'd bring in a tin of rice pudding, and he'd eat his tin of cold rice pudding. Anyway, there was a bully in the steelworks, and the bully came up and kept shoving him. He shoved him once too far. So this young man turned round with his tin of rice pudding and hit him in the chops with the rice pudding and took his teeth out. So honestly, it's so when you say he couldn't knock the skin off a rice pudding, the rice pudding can knock the skin off the face. So you see, it's amazing, isn't it? The depths you get with me, from rice pudding to violence. But the recipe's there, it's lush, whether you're on a picnic or not. You should be on a picnic, it's a bank holiday Monday. As I'm sure many of you are at this very moment on this bright and hopefully sunny bank holiday, you're down by the seaside with Led Zeppelin. There's something to be said for the British seaside, you know, the tradition. You know, I'm a Blackpool man myself. You know, Blackpool Tower, I used to love it when I was a kid. And, you know, downstairs you've got the Blackpool Tower Ballroom, you know, the one that I never got to when I was on Strictly because I got voted out. He could have just stuck me one more week. He was dead funny, though. One of the journalists said to me, "So, Dave, are you gutted not to make it to Blackpool?" And I said, "Well, I live in Barrowing Furness. It's only 15 quid on an away day. I'm not exactly gutted." But, you know, my mum used to take me there to the Tower Ballroom. And we used to sit there and listen to Reginald Dixon, his mighty Wurlitzer arise from the floor. Oh, it was brilliant. It was dead psychedelic. This whirling Wurlitzer with this mad bloke in a fat jacket going, then we'd go and eat whelks. Still, I don't like whelks, like eating tumours. But yeah, the seasides are brilliant. I'm living down in Kent now a lot of the time. Whitstable's nice, a bit posher, you know, it's all right. Morecambe used to go there to the tea gardens. I'm waffling now. Anyway, time for an email. Shut up, Dave. The name is Lee Ellis, and the subject is "Wish I Was Not At Work." Message: "Hi, guys. I listen every Sunday as I'm at work, wishing I was in my garage working on my chop or on my bandit. I have just polished it, and it looks great. What about your bike, Lee?" "I was talking with my mate about which one of you two was the bike polisher and which one had the mucky bike. I reckon your bike is always cleaner than size. He looks like a turn-up-and-ride kind of guy. I hope your travels treated you good. Lee, a.k.a. Pretty Boy." Well, Lee, it's funny, you know, with the bike thing. When we first started on the bikers, we do the miles, you know, on the linear road trips like the Baltic and stuff, and we want the bikes to show the miles. And the very first trip, they'd send a runner or whatever, or somebody to clean the bikes every 2 days. No, just leave them. We want the miles there. If I'm honest, I think the pair of us are bike cleaners by necessity, but it depends on the bike. I mean, I've got an old Laverda Jota, which is a classic. It's beautiful. I couldn't let that get dirty. You know, it would just be sacrilege because somebody over the years, and I know the previous owners looked after it so much, I couldn't do that. But then I've got my bike and, you know, you knock around a bit. Kingy's more the one to tinker with it. I'm more the one to take it to the garage. You know, but actually, you know, these days with everything so electronic and fabulous that, you know, it doesn't go wrong very often and it's best left to the garage. No, we're both mucky pups, I think. Truth of that one.
Danny Bowes, life and rock.
Working on a night moves, trying to make some front page driving news. Working on a night moves in the summertime.
Bob Seger, Silver Bullet Band, Night Moves. I love that track. I used to do that. Well, we used to do it in our first ever band when we were kids. We played almost every song from that album. All the ones we could actually play. Because we weren't that amazing as musicians. But we used to do that one. And there was another one. Oh, God. I can't remember what it was now. It will come back to me. Good cover on there on that album by a song written originally by Ann Peebles. She called it Come to Mama and he called it Come to Papa. For obvious reasons. And interesting, just returning back to Nazareth with Hair of the Dog, there's a great cover on that album. They did some good covers, you know. Nazareth. I mean, This Flight Tonight's a cover, isn't it? Joni Mitchell tune. And on that album, there's a fantastic bluesy cover called Guilty, which was written by Randy Newman. See? I'm a mine of useless information. Okay, let's move on. I've got an email here from Mick Cummings in London. Ah, yes, this is in response to my little rant the other week when I was standing in for Wyatt and ruining his show about ticket outs. He's basically saying, this is all about supply and demand. Yeah, let's just go back. Ticket touts. I was having a little moan, or I wasn't moaning. Other people were moaning because of the Blackstone Cherry tickets that went on sale, and all the ticket touts got them before anybody else, and they were all moaning and saying, why can't I get a ticket? Why did the touts always get them first? But this is an alternative view. This comes in from Mick Cummings, as I say, in London, and he says, it's supply and demand. If people didn't turn up without a ticket, hoping to get in, touts would not exist. People want touts, but then they moan when they can't get a ticket when they're on general sale. It's free enterprise, a free market. I would not gamble with my money buying numerous tickets on the hope that I could sell them all on the night. Just have to live with touts, he says. Well, I mean, that's a view. I suppose it's a view. But my view is, if it was easy for people to buy tickets, they wouldn't need touts. They would get their tickets in the first place. Most people would. But then I suppose, I don't know. What do I know? Nothing. Thanks for your view, Mick. It's, it's a view. I think we'll leave it there. Do
you wanna get right? He spent thousands of nights behind the mic with Def Leppard. Now he's behind our mic.
Joe Elliott on Planet Rock.
Well, they were mercilessly panned for giving their album away. In fact, they Dropboxed it or they emailed it to everybody overnight. And I say, you get a free U2 album, take it. If you don't want it, delete it. I think it's a great album. The album is Songs of Innocence, the song that we just heard, Raised by Wolves. And before that, Muse, Once Again. Wow, I never even thought about that. Produced by Robert John McLang. From the album Drones, we heard the song Mercy. Now, it's something that Mutt didn't produce. This is Nazareth.
My guest this week is founding member of Thin Lizzy, Eric Bell. Eric, welcome.
Thank you very much, sir.
Now, growing up with music troubles in my house meant the record player broke and my brother would just have a Status Quo tape on. Mm-hmm. In Northern Ireland, troubles meant something altogether different when you were growing up. Did the music scene get affected? Was it a different landscape because of the Troubles.
There was always that tension in the air all the time. Like when I was going to school, you'd be stopped at the school gate because you had an Orangefield Boys school badge on, and these three Catholics would be waiting for you. So all that was going on. But when the real Troubles started, I had moved from Belfast to Dublin to join an Irish show band called The Dreams. So I escaped a lot of the Troubles.
Because I know a lot of artists, I mean, Andy Cairns of Therapy, Ricky Warwick was saying it kind of shaped a movement, the punk movement.
Absolutely.
So you managed to form your own musical opinions without the backdrop of the Northern Ireland issues.
More or less, yes. And any time I came back to visit my family, it was unbelievable. Because you get off the train station in Belfast, there was soldiers in full combat outfits. And then there was the BP specials. They were the policemen from Northern Ireland. And they always carried guns anyway. Always. Ever since I was a child, I've seen them.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what took you to music then? Was it obviously not the backdrop of what was going on in Ireland? Was it family influence? Did Elvis capture you on TV? What was it for you?
It was two things mainly. It was Lonnie Donegan, who blew me completely away. I never heard anyone like him before. Everything else was real straight. You know, I'm a pink toothbrush, you're a blue toothbrush. That's what they were playing in those days on the radio. And every now and again, you'd get this track that would just come on that was totally different. And one of them was Lonnie Donegan, Rock Island Line. And everyone mentions him. Mick Jagger mentioned him, Keith Richard, Eric Clapton. They were all into this guy, Lonnie Donegan. The second lot was The Shadows. When I heard The Shadows, my life changed.
What led you to rock and roll? Because you were, you know, you've chosen the likes of Chuck Berry. You've also got some B.B. King there. So you had a rock and roll blues influence in there as well. Did you discover them later around the same time?
Well, that's what happened. It happened in London as well. This blues thing just, it was like overnight. One night you're playing Shadows songs, and the next week, this guy came round to my house and he had about six long playing albums. Howlin' Wolf. And I went, what? Howlin' what? And he lent me them to actually listen to them because I'd never heard blues before. And it took me a long time to decipher it, you know. It was very raw. It was like black magic music, basically. It was so raw, and they were singing about certain subjects, and the sound of the instruments and the voice and the harmonica was just, it was amazing. It took me a while, and I had to lie in bed with the light off in darkness and put these blues records on and just listen to them, you know. And I eventually started getting a feel for it.
And here is classic B.B. King, The Thriller's Gone. It's My Planet Rocks.
Thriller's gone. The thriller's gone away. The thriller's gone.
If it rocks, it's here. Planet Rock. Planet Rock. Planet Rock.
Led Zeppelin, Black Dog, My Planet Rocks, and my guest Carmine Appice. Of course, your brother Vinny. This connects nicely because Michael Schenker was here a few months ago. He was talking about, of course, his brother Rudolph. And I was saying, as brothers, did you ever share ideas? And he says, no, not with my brother. In case he stole it, you go to him and say, here's my song.
Yeah.
With your brother, was there any sort of sibling rivalry about whether it be songwriting or drum tricks?
No, because we're 11 years difference. See, I already was a rock star when he started seeing me on TV. So he was like, I want to do that. And Vinny would be like 9 years old, 8, 9 years old, and pull me into the porch where the drums were and start playing. And my mother would say, how is he? I said, he's good. We should send him to lessons where I went. So they sent him for lessons. So by the time he was 12, he was great. He was 17 years old. He quit school. And before that, he played the hand claps on Whatever Gets You Through the Night by John Lennon.
Right.
And he met John Lennon. Next day, he's in school and he's sleeping. And the teacher would go, Appice, wake up. What are you doing? Sleeping? He says, well, I'm sorry. I was up late last night. Is anyone else here play with one of the Beatles last night? It's like one of those attitudes, you know? And it's a great story in the book about that, John Lennon and my brother Vinny. My brother Vinny says, I'm Italian. My mother makes great Italian food. Do you like Italian food? He says, yeah, I love Italian food. He said, well, my mother cooked for Rod Stewart, for Jeff Beck, Rick Derringer. How about she make you some? What do you want? He goes, I love lasagna. So he tells my mother. So my mother gives him a pan of lasagna, gives it to John Lennon, you know, and then never hears anything about it. So maybe a month or two later, I go play Madison Square Garden with Rod. We have a big party. You know, John comes to the party. So my mother's at the party with my father. And she says, hey, is that John Lennon over there? I said, yeah. She goes, you know, I never found out if you like my lasagna. I said, oh, okay. So let's go over and talk to him. She says, okay, Mom, let's go talk to John Lennon. So we go over to John Lennon. Hi, John. I'm Vinnie Appice's mother. You know, I made you a little lasagna. I said, hi, John. It's my mother and Carmine from the Rod Band. Oh, yeah. Nice to meet you, Carmine, again. Yeah, I did get the lasagna. So my mother says, how was it? He goes, it was delicious. I loved it. So my mother says, could I get my pan back? Classic, right? Classic Italian mother, because that was the family pan.
Yeah, know? Yeah. Got you never know who's going to be visiting at any given time. Right?
And Vinny played the last gig with John Lennon that he played live.
Wow. Well, before we get up to date with the new book, you've chosen a track from Prince.
I bought into this house, and my friend whose house it was a co-manager of Prince. And she said, it's all good. You can have this bedroom, but every couple of months, a new act, the name is Prince, would come in and stay. He hated hotels, if that's okay. I said, that's no problem. I could stay with my girlfriend. I was still on the road with Rod. So I wasn't there a lot. So I said, fine. So I used to see Prince in the house. How you doing, Prince? Everything good? Yep. One word answers.
He was just
a
shy. Is
that your
then?
New track? Yep. Sounds good. Thanks. You know, and then I sort of got to know him a little bit. You know, he asked me to drive him to Hollywood. I put him in the Pantera, scared him a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and then one time he got booed off the stage with the Rolling Stones, and he came back. He was depressed, and me and Jamie talked him out. You know, we were like prep talking him, you know, help talking him, you know, to get out of the depression. And then when I moved out, he started becoming big. I was invited to see him at Universal Amphitheater. And now here's this guy. He's a lot like Hendrix. Hendrix was very timid, and he'd get on stage, and he's a monster.
Yeah.
I said, is this the same guy? You know? And then when they did do the Purple Rain premiere, he invited me to the Purple Rain premiere in Hollywood, and I sat next to Sheila E., and we became friends over the years, you know, from that. The manager, I talked to her, you know, around recently, and she said, you know, Prince always loved you, you know, always... He always thought you were a nice guy, and you helped him when you know he needed help. And then, like, just after he died, I did an event for my book in Nashville, and they were going to play Purple Rain as a tribute to Prince, and I watched this other drummer playing it. And I went up to the guy organizer and I said, look, I got to play that song. He says, why? I said, because the guy's not playing it right. I got to play that song. So he said, all right, well, go tell him that. I said, no, you tell him.
You get your hands dirty.
I don't want to be the bad guy. So I ended up playing the song, and it was, you know, for me, it was more of my tribute to Prince for that night. I never meant to call you in your sorrow. I never meant to call you.
Nice to finish off there with Carmine Appice's memories of Prince. So that's your lot for today. Really hope you've enjoyed listening. We'll be back next week with more Planet Rock highlights, so do join us then. Remember, you can listen to Planet Rock via your DAB radio, online at planetrock.com and via our Planet Rock app, or you can listen on your telly on Sky Channel 0110 or Virgin Channel 924. And remember, you can listen to me every weekday morning on Planet Rock Breakfast. See ya.
All the best bits of Planet Rock in our weekly podcast with Sky Talk. Love to rub it on for hours? Search Sky Talk now to find a pack to suit you.